Blog Talk Radio.
Interesting birthdays today are Jacques Offenbach, who was a French a composer of the 19th century, Romantic. He wrote operas and also probably best known for Gaieté Parisienne. It's also a ballet. And he wrote several great musical works. He also came, I think, to the United States. Great musician. Another great musician, singer, opera singer, Helen Trabelle, born an American Wagnerian soprano. Born in St. Louis, when Kirsten Flagstad, probably the greatest Wagnerian singer of all time, Norwegian, she broke onto the world stage in the early 30s, mid-30s, in Metropolitan Opera, and she sang all the great roles of Wagnerian opera and also Baroque operas like Gluck's Orpheus and Eurydice. When World War II broke out and the Nazis occupied Norway, she left the Metropolitan Opera and went back to Norway. So they had to fill in, get a singer, and they chose Helen Trabelle. And she filled in and she sang with people like Lars Melchior, the great Danish singer, who became an American citizen. He refused to go back to Denmark, which was also occupied by the Nazis. And Helen Trabelle sang there. And then Rudolf Bing, an Austrian, a Jewish ethnic heritage, took over the Met. And Helen Trabelle decided to go to Hollywood, and he thought this was D-class, and he fired her. He also fired Maria Callas. But Helen Trabelle was a great great American Wagnerian soprano. There's other musicians born today. Andre Watts. His father was a black American GI during World War II, got together with a Hungarian woman who was a pianist and a teacher, and they had Andre, and the GI deserted the family, and the mother kept family together. I don't know if Andre had any brothers or sisters. Anyway, he became a great pianist, and I think he debuted with Leonard Bernstein in the New York Philharmonic in one of the young person's concerts in New York during the early 60s. Other musicians born today, Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys. We had, I think that's all the music. Oh, yeah, Chet Atkins died today. A literary person, Lillian Hellman, who was a leftist, and she got into a big fight, I think, with Dorothy Parker, if I'm not mistaken. She also she was one of the suspected communists when their Congress was investigating the communist influence in Hollywood. And some controversy about Lillian Hellman and her relationships. Talking about World War II and communism and totalitarianism, Jean Moulin, a French resistance leader, was captured by the Nazis, the SS, and he was tortured by Klaus Barbie, horribly tortured, and then he died. He was a French resistance hero, Jean Moulin. Among the other people, talking about right-wing and Nazis, Jean Le Pen, who has been running political campaigns, trying to become the premier and president of France, who's also, some people think he's a closet Nazi, his daughter ran a campaign in the last French presidential elections. A guy who made a lot of World War II movies, Errol Flynn, was born today. We had Audie Murphy, hero, was probably one of the most decorated people and individuals, American soldiers, in World War II. He died young. He was from Texas, and he made some other films that weren't military or hero type. Excuse me. Then Olympia Dukakis, who was a sister of former governor and presidential candidate Michael Dukakis, her birthday today. And one of the interesting deaths today, we had William the Fourth, who was the uncle of Victoria. Victoria, he had no issue, no heir, so Victoria was his niece, and at 18 she became the Queen of England and was the longest reigning monarch in British history. And I think maybe Elizabeth II may surpass her. Elizabeth's getting up there. She's in her early 80s. On this day, and also on PBS, they're running Victoria's reign on the various PBS channels. You might check your local listings. In among the events today, in 1567, the Jews were expelled from Brazil. Getting back to the British history, India was called the Jewel and the Crown. That was Victoria's name for it. But before that, before the British government took over India, India was run by the East India Company. It would be like General Motors running the United States, or some of our, like Puerto Rico or Guam, that sort of situation. Anyway, there was a revolt by some of the Indians in Calcutta, and they forced all the British soldiers and Robert Clive relieved them, and they were sent and imprisoned in what was called the Black Hole of Calcutta, big scandal in Indian history in 1756. 1787, after the United States became independent, the Great Seal of the United States was chosen by Congress, and the eagle was our symbol, or still is. American history, Eli Whitney got his patent or applied for a patent for the cotton gin, and that was the beginning of the end of black slavery in America. Savannah was the first steamship to cross the Atlantic, and, of course, Elizabeth began her 63-year reign. She died in 1901 on January 22nd. Get this, the first bank chartered in the United States in 1861, and it wasn't in New York or Chicago or Boston, was in Davenport, Iowa. and on this day in 1863, West Virginia became the 35th state. Now, this happened during the American Civil War. People in the western part of Virginia didn't support the Confederacy, and they illegally seceded. A state cannot group within a state cannot secede. Now, we've had this problem in California, where there was talk of Northern California being split off from Southern California, and then far Northern California, they tried to set up a state, a separate state around World War II, but that didn't work either. But for political reasons, the Lincoln accepted the fact that these people in West Virginia broke off from the state of Virginia, and he recognized it as a state, and it became a state in 1863 in the middle of his first term. On his successor, Andrew Johnson, in 1867, Alaska, he announced the purchase of Alaska, and we have a San Francisco connection in Richard Bodisco. The Bodisco family, Count Bodisco, was one of the Americans who negotiated the deal with the Russians. And then in 1874, those of you who are lifeguards, the first life-saving medal was created. In 1911, the NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, was incorporated in New York. Now, they have embraced the homosexual agenda, and this may be the beginning of the end for them, because a lot of blacks who are conservative and trying to put families together object to this agenda. In 1936, Jesse Owens broke the 100-meter record, and we're going to play an audio of him at that time.
Jesse, what was your biggest thrill in Germany?
Well, Bill, the biggest thrill in Germany was when I won the 100-yard dash and the American flag went up and it was playing the Star Spangled Banner.
That was very copacetic. Now, how did you like the German meals?
Well, the German meals were all right, but it took too long to get them.
Jesse, what is your immediate plan?
My immediate plan for the present time is that I'm going back home. I'm going back to the university to finish my year in college. I have another year, as you all know, and I want to get my degree in the end of June.
Will you turn professional?
Turn professional, I do not know. As I said before, I have another year in school, and I haven't any plans about turning professional whatsoever.
Jesse, what was your biggest thrill in Germany?
Well, my biggest thrill was when I won the 100-meter dash, and the American flag went up, and they were playing the Star Spangled Banner, and we stood up there and salute, and it was really a marvelous thing.
That was very copacetic. Now, how did you like the German meals?
Well, the German meals were fine, but it took a little bit too long to get them.
That was Jesse Owens' interview after he came back to Chicago. He later became a Chicago alderman during the administration of Richard Daley. And we will talk about Richard Daley in this upcoming interview as soon as I finish the events on this day that are relevant, historical events that are relevant, births, deaths, and events that are relevant to us here in the USA. In 1939, the first rocket that was propelled by a liquid propellant that was developed. I think it was Robert Goddard, professor in Massachusetts, that did a lot of experimentation. It wasn't the Germans. It was an American, Dr. Goddard. In 1943, in the middle of World War II, CORE, the Congress of Racial Economy, Congress of Racial Equality, was organized. And, of course, there was a lot of discrimination against blacks. And there was one black ensign who became a U.S. Naval ensign in World War II. Blacks were usually stewards on the ships, and the same thing happened to Filipinos. But later, the Filipinos were allowed to use that position or to come into the U.S. Navy as sailors. A lot of that has changed now. We have quite a few multi-ethnics in our military. 1944, this is very relevant to Steve Mary case and a lot of the people that are involved in various things that I covered. The Central Intelligence Agency was chartered. Now, the predecessor to the CIA was OSS, the Office of Strategic Services, which was set up by FDR and Wild Bill Donovan, who served in World War One. He was also a Wall Street lawyer. He was the head of that. Now, we had here in San Francisco, we had a famous judge, Gordon, who was involved in OSS. Her uncle was the actor Edward Everett Horton, who co-starred in movies with Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers. Now, Fred Astaire's older sister, Adele Astaire, married an English nobleman whose grandfather was assassinated by the grandfather of Terrence Hallinan, who was the district attorney who illegally prosecuted U.S. Navy sailor Stephen Neri. We'll get into that. A mini documentary is on the case, because it goes all over the place, is in process, and we hope to have it finished within the next month, and it'll be available on DVD. In 1947, Truman had succeeded FDR as president, and was a Republican Congress, and they passed to control the unions and strikes. They passed the Taft-Hartley Act. Now, the Taft was named after Senator Robert Taft, who was Mr. Republican, famous Taft family from Ohio. Robert Taft was the son of the President William Howard Taft, the biggest, fattest man ever to occupy the White House. He never became president. Harry Truman vetoed it because he felt he owed his support and loyalty to the American unions. In 1966, the first woman, Sheila Scott, was a Brit, flew around the world. Now, she did what Amelia Earhart wanted to do. So that was that. Now, when we had the Beta Breakers in last May, 2012, I and other people witnessed a heart attack, and we are going to replay Dr. Eric Szymanski's advice on how to runners and to people. You know, a lot of people decide they're going to run in these marathons and these charity events. They're not in physical shape, and even if they are, they still have to be careful. And so he's a cardiologist who will be working at the Massachusetts General Hospital, and we also have a video. He was incorporated in it. And it's called Dr. Eric, and offers a cardiologist's advice to runners. And it's on our Amicus Veritas YouTube site. It's up there now, AmiCusVeritas. And here's his brief interview that I did with him.
Dr. Eric, who is doing his resident cardiology, and he comes from a family of his father is a cardiologist back east. Doc, every year we see people who are older, and they try to do a marathon, San Francisco, in this case, from the Bay to the Breakers. And this year we had a guy who they thought was dead. He was lucky that they were able to get him to the hospital. We still don't know his condition. What practical tips could you tell people who go out on these charity walks, these marathons, and that sort of thing? And you're going to Boston, and you'll see the Boston Marathon.
Absolutely. So we see this very often, as it's been occurring with multiple marathons been occurring in the last couple of years. Chicago and also Boston recently had some deaths as well. Some of these we can't predict because they do occur in younger populations that have no known cardiovascular disease. And a lot of these are trained athletes and still unfortunately undergo these terrible end result events. However, for the untrained athlete, I think the bottom line is competitive racing, especially any exercise that is unusual for the patient, is usually not advised unless there has been a significant training period beforehand. So really, these marathons are for trained athletes, and for people who are not trained athletes, they should be undergoing at least a formal program for several months up to the point that can condition themselves. The other important thing is the racing environment. So a lot of times the weather is very hot, and that also precipitates a lot of these events. Either whether they're just revivable events or actually terminal events, but staying hydrated, trying to stay out of very warm weather when you're exerting yourself to a point that's above and beyond your usual conditioning.
One quick question. We always see the African runners usually win. Are they more, shall we say, healthy, speaking from a cardiovascular situation, perspective?
Yeah. I'm not sure if there's anything genetically or structurally different about a lot of the African runners. They just tend to be very skilled athletes. So, but it is an unusual pattern, and they definitely tend to win most races. So, yeah.
Okay, thanks, Doc.
Absolutely.
I hope people take your advice
when we have
less medical problems.
Thank you.
Okay.
That was Dr. Eric Szymanski. He attended Northwestern University Medical School. There's some history there. In 1976, December 20th, just before Christmas, then the late Richard Daley, the first Richard Daley, or Richard I, as his detractors referred to him, suffered a heart attack, and they tried to resuscitate him, and they brought him to a Northwestern University hospital, but he died on December 20th, 1976. So there's this little link of history. Just goes to show you. Of course, if you look at Richard Daley, he was rather florid. He wasn't that old when he died also. I think he was in his 70s. And, of course, his son later succeeded him, Richard Daley II, and there's a story there. I will get into it about being arrested or being detained at a notorious party in Chicago during the 60s and how his mother was called to the police station to take him out of there lest he be an embarrassment to his father, Richard Daley I, who was mayor of Chicago at the time. And I was working with someone apprenticing on a police beat at the time. So anyway, a little history there. This is not known, but apparently I just learned today, and I've been checking, that Greeks who are living abroad, who have Greek citizenship, and even Greeks of Greek descent, American Greeks, for instance, have been sending money to their fellow Greeks. And this is interesting. I just discovered that Melbourne, Australia, is considered the third largest Greek city. I didn't get to Melbourne when I was over there as a correspondent. But anyway, they've been sending money to Greece, and these people, and of course we know the Greeks have been living high, I would say high on the hog, because I don't know any pigs over there, but they've been living high on the sheep, and the sheep are getting sheared. They've had some disasters. A lot of their olive groves were involved in a catastrophic fire, because the Greeks are very big on manufacturing of olive oil, very good olive oil. And apparently now the wealthier Greeks are withdrawing their money and placing it in safer shelters, let's put it that way. But this is what's been going on. And, of course, now the Greeks, foreign Greeks who are living abroad, whether of American or Australian descent, are not sending money to Greece. And so this has precipitated this latest financial crisis. And as I said in an earlier show, that the Greeks has two unusual laws. One, if you don't pay a parking ticket, if you're in their healthcare system, you're denied healthcare until you pay the ticket. I guess it's even if you try it with drachmas, they don't accept the money. And also, the Greeks ban polling 2 weeks before an election. We ought to have that over here, you know, because people are influenced by polls, and of course the pollsters, and who are employed by candidates who want to get elected or reelected, will hire pollsters who will rig the polls. And I did polling for ABC, exit polling twice, and also work in the Eugene McCarthy campaign back in 1968 when I was a student. Of course, we'll see what happens. We shall see what we shall see. Now, the other thing that we ought to be aware of is that people who question Mr. O's birth certificate or where he was really born, where he lived, did he give up his citizenship, are being trashed. You know, and nobody's really, this has never been resolved, and we're going to see if this is going to become a campaign issue. The other issue that's really outrageous, and having worked in the field, in animal field and environmental, and doing many programs, and some of which have been on this station, that there's a thing, there's a medical therapy called animal-assisted therapy for people who are either depressed or such as Ann Romney, who she can afford the horses and can afford to use them, and she has multiple sclerosis, and she's been unfairly attacked. In fact, it's really quite sexist to do this to her. Would they do this to a man? And she has the right to use this type of therapy, and it is a valid therapy. There's nothing phony about not using horses for medical therapy. And it's not only for multiple sclerosis. It's been used in other areas, especially with children. And also some of the prisons, I did a series on animals as pets in prisons. In fact, I think I'll run that interview that I did at Perry Prison in Auckland, New Zealand, where it was one of the first prisons in the world to allow their prisoners to have birds and fish. And that was also to relieve the tension and also as a means of a disciplinary control, that if the prisoner misbehaved, his birds and fish were taken from him. And then, you know, we had the Birdman of Alcatraz, which some of that is a lot of fiction, and we'll get into that. And I think I'll run a show on that. We do have the interview that I did when I was down there. I was the first journalists of any media, not only New Zealand and Australia, but American media, to be allowed into a New Zealand prison to interview a prisoner and the warden on animal-assisted therapy and related issues. So we'll play that. I think I'll play that interview. I'll try to have it for Friday or next week. We're also working on the getting technical things down so that we have other live interviews or taped interviews, which I like, and those will be coming up. So I encourage you to go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site, AmicusVeritas, and we'll be putting up also the Expo Purgated video that the Canadians were outraged about, in which the Canadian cannibal, Luca Marotta, videotaped his torture and killing and cannibalism of this Chinese exchange student, or Chinese student, who was also his lover. And we're only doing this to illustrate that this is not the first time this has happened. It happened here in San Francisco on a more restrained basis, where politicians, judges, and media people were at a birthday party in May of 1997, in which there was simulated cannibalism and sodomy with a whiskey or wine bottle, and there was also glory hole activity, which was participated in by top politicians and office holders, et cetera, and hanger-oners here in San Francisco. And it was so bad that even the papers couldn't avoid censoring it. And also on the Rodney King thing, in the old days, before there was a lot of print media, there was the town. News was disseminated by, in effect, citizen journalism. And I think that had not whoever it was that videotaped the beating of Rodney King, had it not been videotaped, it might have probably would have been the news report of the story of that beating would have probably been watered down by people who want to cover up stuff done by police that are out of control. But that videotape, they couldn't repudiate it, and I think that was the first modern example of citizen journalism. Well, I understand we still don't know who that is. We also, there's this ongoing debate that W. Mark Felt was not the original Deep Throat, that he was a conduit. And now I'm told today by some other people that who are political cognoscenti that it might have been G. Gordon Liddy, who was also involved in the Watergate scandal, and he Watergate break-in, and he also went to prison. So he also had a radio show out of Virginia, but he never dealt with our issues. But we're going to keep on this, because I heard it was possibly a Marine colonel in the White House, in charge of White House security. So we're working on that one. So we're going to end with our usual politics and poker, and we'll have some more interesting things, and do go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site. So we are going to end with our usual thing. Where is she? No, where is he? I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that. Politics and poker, here we go. Now it's a little slow going up. Good.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Hey,
Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I. Fine,
fine. Me too. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year. Big ace.
Ace bet.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
All right. A possible flush? Nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some name we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
Well, we'll be back Friday at 4 o'clock. This is Peter Paul Brazola. Good night.